This audio is part of the Pen Machine Podcast at podcast.penmachine.com, also listed at blueberry, blubrry.com.
Okay. All right, so I figured out that language thing that I couldn't figure out before. I was just completely blind to the menu. You look up on the tools menu, there's a menu called language, reasonably enough, and you can say set language. So in this case, that paragraph is set for U.S. English, but you can choose any number of Cherokee, Canadian English, Congo French, all sorts of options, or do not check spelling or grammar. So you might come across this. I've come across this occasionally where the spell check just doesn't check the spelling, and that's why, because that do not check spelling or grammar was set for that section. So if you just select all and say set it all to Canadian English or U.S. English or whatever, then that gets out of the way. This detect language automatically is interesting. It can try to figure out which language that is.
That's what it's trying to do when it's not.
Yeah, so I don't know what happens if you stick a bunch of German words in an English sentence, what it would do. Or, you know, traditional Chinese characters in English. I don't know what we do. So, anyway, so that's that issue. Figured that out during my lunch break. Once I was well fed, my brain worked a little better. So we have two options right now as to how we're going to approach this. Again, the agenda was very loose. So we can I can either give you time now to work on this quick and dirty edit thing. Or we can talk about the track changes and stuff first and do that later. What would you prefer?
Let's carry on with track.
Carry on with track changes? Does that sound good? Sounds good to me. All righty then. So, as I explained before the break, track changes is really two separate things. There's track changes and there's display changes, and they are completely independent of one another. So if you go to Tools and say Track Changes, you get this toolbar here. And it enables you to control the both aspects of this this process. So if you what you have here is... Okay. This button lets you turn track changes on or off. So if it's off, it's like that. If it's on, it's like that. Depending on which version of Word you have, you may see different things. The Mac version, the toolbar looks a little bit different. The older versions of Word, you might have tools, track changes, and then some submenu items, activate, deactivate, show, hide. They're sort of set there rather than on a toolbar. And you also can activate this reviewing pane here. It shows you what the changes are. But if you turn this on, by default, what you get is this over here. This is which view you get. So by default, you get the red bloodbath view, which is the... Here is the... Oops. Is the main stuff. So, by default, you get this... Where's the traction thing? So, by default, in the current version of Word, what you get is this. So if you delete something, it used to be that it showed a line through it. And it was actually within the body of the text. Now it puts it over here at the side and says this is what you deleted here. Still not particularly elegant. If you do a lot of editing, it can turn into a real mess. So what I recommend you do, if you need to use this, is use Final. Because what that does is that just lets you do your usual stuff. You can say, okay, delete that, grab this, move it over here, down there, light up, and so on and so on. You can type some new things. Okay, stuff like that. So, you just behave here as you would normally. But this little thing is still turned on. It's still tracking your changes. It's just not showing them. So if you go back to final showing markup, you can see what I did there. Stuff has been deleted, stuff has been inserted, shows you what's going on over there. So you can take a look at what's happening, but when you're editing, you can actually do it in such a way that you don't have to watch it as it's going on. This is particularly useful if you're exchanging documents with people and a whole bunch of people have made edits and all you want to see is what it looks like now. And then when you, if you get to something and say, well, what happened there? That sentence totally changed meaning. Or I don't know what's going on. You can turn that on and see what's been inserted and deleted and changed and by whom. The other option is you can show original. And in this case, it shows you what's been deleted and only highlights what's been inserted over here. So this shows you what you had before, or you can even just say original. This shows you the pre-edit version. Now, here's one of the confusing parts. You can turn this off, and it still shows you what the edits were. So now it's no longer watching what you edit. And in fact, if you go in and I go in and delete all this. Oh, it's not actually tracking it. It's deleted. Something got deleted, but it doesn't remember what because it's watching. So I turned the tracking off and kept editing. So you can have the track. Essentially, it only tracks changes when the robot is watching. If you've got it turned on, it'll monitor your changes whether you're showing them or not. And it can show the changes whether you're currently monitoring what you're changing or not. So what that means is, theoretically, you could probably, if you're collaboratively editing with a bunch of people, you could be sneaky and always turn the tracking off when you make your edits so they never knew what you did. That might annoy them, but that's one option. You can selectively turn it off, or for example, if you're moving a bunch of chunks of the document around but not actually editing them, you might want to turn the tracking off so that you don't end up with deleted here and then inserted over here when it's exactly the same thing, and then people really don't need to look through it again if you just say, well, I moved it. That sort of thing is useful there. Now, when you get a document that's been edited this way with the track changes on, you also have the process for accepting and rejecting what the changes are. Now, you can either go, you know, the one-off way is to go next, next, and at each point you say, so the slow and grinding way is, or if you get a document from somebody and you're just wondering what's changed, you say next, and it takes you to the first change, and you say, oh, that was deleted. Well, you can either say, yes, I'll accept that change, or no, I'll reject that change, and I want it to go back the way it was. And then you move to one, you can say, yes, that one is okay. The other option is for you to say, accept all changes in document. So you can just say, okay, they're all fine, and accept them all, and they'll all go in as they were. Or, no, all the changes were bogus. I'm going to go back to the way it was before we get any of this tracking. Now, what happens is when you're tracking changes, the document potentially gets very large because it's tracking all those changes, all the insertions and deletions, and even if they include graphics and charts and movies and whatever else you might have inserted there, if you delete them all but you have track changes on, it still keeps them in the document. It just keeps them as tracked as deleted. So the document could be extremely large even if there's only two words in it if you've had the track changes on the whole time. So that's something to keep in mind. What I often do, what I find as an editor is that, particularly with new clients, they'll say, well, I want to use track changes. And my first response is, okay. Because they're legitimately somewhat paranoid. They want to see what you did so that they can make sure that you didn't change what they meant to say, and just so they can see what you accomplished. What I do is if that's what they want me to do, and this is just a one back and forth, I'm not talking, heavy collaboration with people, is I go to the final view, but I turn the track changes on. I go and make all my edits of whatever sort, and, move stuff around, and do this and do that, and break paragraphs. Mm-hmm. So, but I would leave it at this final. So, I'd be editing it so that I can't see what's going on there at the time. And so on and so on, and delete, and whatever I do. And then, before I send it to the customer, I do two things. First, I turn this to final showing markup so they can see what I did. So they see the deletions and they see the insertions. And then I save that as Derek edited the markup, for example. Then I go back and I turn off, before I do that, I turn the track changes off. I turn the track changes off so that it's no longer going to, if they type some more stuff, it's not going to introduce more things into this document that I've created for them. Once I've done my edits, I turn the track changes off so that what they get, if they do anything else, it's not going to add on to it. You can choose what you want to do there. The other thing I do is I make sure it's off, and then I say, accept all changes in document, and then final. You don't even have to do that because I've accepted all the changes, and then I save again. Derek edited final. So here's what that gives them. That gives them two copies of the document. They've got the one that's got all the edits in it, shown with the track changes, with all the red bloodbath and everything else in it. And then they get the other one that's final, complete, finished. No track changes stored in there anymore. It's just the document. And almost every single time they go, great, and they just use it. They never actually do anything with the track changes version. So essentially all I'm really doing is editing the document as I normally would and giving them the final version. And the track changes is only there as evidence that I actually did something.
What would original show you?
Original would show you, that's a good question. Let's open up the Derek edited markup. So I've got the markup here. If I go, I've turned that off, original. It actually shows the way it was before I edited it. So you can flip
back
and forth.
Before you saved it, it remembers what to be.
Yeah, well, that's what the track changes is doing. It's tracking everything between the original and the final. So if you send it to them in the original format, even though the tracks are changes, they're going to go, you didn't change anything. So that's why it's worth setting it to that display. But it lets you look at what did the document look like before and what did it look like after, or what did it look like in between with the edits.
Okay.
I don't actually use the original view very much, but what that lets you do is, for example, you want to see, well, it started off as a 13-page document, and now it's an 18-page document. You can see what the two look like and, whatever else there.
So the client could then view it in those four different ways as well.
Most people don't know they can do that.
Okay.
Now you do.
When you first open track changes, what's the view that you get usually?
By default, you get the final showing markup. So what it does is it shows you what you've inserted in red, and it shows you what's deleted over on the side. Older versions used to show you what's deleted crossed out, which got really awful because then you couldn't tell what was going on, and something looked like it was 40 pages long when it was really only 10.
Okay.
So this is better. It's still hard to read because of all the color. And the underlining. And especially if you get multiple people working on it and they have different colors and things, it can get really confusing.
How does that work? If three people are editing a document, how do you know who's making what?
Well, when you install Word, you say, my name is whatever, and my initials are DKM. Usually it asks you for your initials. And so when you get a document like this, if I passed it to you, Word would automatically...
save your profile?
Well, it would automatically say, okay, this first person used red, so now it's going to be you, and you're going to be blue.
Okay.
And the next one's in, I forget what the order is. There's a way to set that in here somewhere. But essentially, it just picks, it knows that there's been somebody, and then somebody else, and somebody else. So everybody will get a different color. And when you start getting into that, it gets really hairy. I've never done substantial collaborative work with a bunch of people doing that. I don't know how well it would work. Personally, when I get into that sort of situation, I tend to prefer using some sort of online tool like a wiki or something that everybody can edit. It tracks the changes in a different way in sort of versions. And I prefer that where you have just different versions of a document that automatically gets stored, which Word doesn't quite... there's ways to do that too, but it's... the collaboration features in Word are a little bit half-baked. They work, But I find this works best if you're just doing some work for somebody, maybe going back and forth between two people. When you start getting more than that, it starts to get a... I prefer just to work on the document. Now, really, in actuality, if somebody sends me a document that needs substantial editing work, I'd rather just sit down and either do it, you know, sit down and just run through it, or really what I'd like to do is print it out and grab my red pen and, you know, mark up all the stuff that needs marking up, indicate where I'm going to move things. That paper still gives you a lot more flexibility in how you can sort of freeform draw what you want to do, and even just for yourself. So even if they want it in a track changes format, if it's really substantial editing, sometimes what I'll do is print it out and do all my markup first and then make all those changes with the track changes on. But I still have my marked up version, and sometimes I'll send them both. I'll say, here are my notes, you know, a photocopy or a fax or a scan of the notes that I made. Here are the track changes, and here's the final version. And really, most of the time, especially if you're on any kind of deadline, they'll just go, great, the final version's wonderful, I'll use that. Or they might find one thing where they go, well, they'll read through the final version and they'll say, something's there's not quite right, and then they can look at the track changes and see what you did. So it makes a good reference. But it's not really the kind of tool that... It's not something I would use regularly if I had the choice. Just because it's not that elegant. The interface has improved somewhat, but the fundamental functionality is still the same. And the key thing to remember is that you've got the robot watching what you're doing, and you've got the display showing what you're doing or not, and that you can have either or both of them on or off at any time, and you can have those different ways of displaying things, and that you can approve or reject comments as you go, or all at once, or probably if you do a selection, you can probably do just that selection. Let's see. So once all changes shown, I don't know when that's going to show up. Not quite sure what that was. Let's see what that says. Is there a comment? Oh, okay, so that's a comment. So what you can also do separately from track changes is, this is another collaborative one. If you highlight a chunk of text or just put insert somewhere and then click this or insert, so there's a comment here or something.
There you go.
I'm
just saying
that. Yeah, comment. So the same thing. That's the same as this. Then you can actually type a little note here. And when you print it out, you can choose to have the comments printed at the end, for example. So that's another collaborative thing where you can sort of discuss the document within the document. This is, again, most of the time on this sort of thing, I'd rather print it out and just write some notes in the margin or some sticky notes on there and send them, you know, give that to the client. And it gives them a more immediate connection, and they can sort of look at it and go, okay, this, that. The commenting feature, I don't know if I've ever used it with a customer. I know some people do, but I don't find it that useful. And, you know, I'm like the web software guy. I do stuff online if I can. But another program that has commenting features that work reasonably well is Acrobat. If you're working with PDF documents, you can actually append comments and little notes and things all over that. I have used that on occasion, and that's good for... that's good for an editorial process where you don't actually want the customer to, or the client or whoever else is working on it to be able to change the document itself very substantially. You just want them to be able to make comments, which you can then incorporate into whatever changes you're going to make. So that works all right, too, if you've got Acrobat, and you all do. But again, you know, more people have more than I do. The other thing is, you know, in a lot of contexts, you can just set up a convention where you say, you know, you just have a thing where you say, well, if I put three square brackets, this isn't... I've done lots of things like that where you just say, okay, anytime I put three square brackets, that's a comment, and then you can search and replace, you know, search for those and cut them out later. The nice thing about that, you can highlight it with the highlighter tool here. You know, so say, okay, that's a note like that. The nice thing about this is that even if you start pasting it into email or another program, or it gets saved as plain text or something, these sort of things still go through. Or if you're doing it on some sort of web interface or whatever, these kind of comments still apply. And it's not that hard to search for them and then pull them out. It depends on what kind of stage of editing you're at, too. Now, if you're talking about the basically the text of the document without worrying about formatting very much, these sort of things, or even the comments and track changes, can work better. If you're getting to the point where you're working with the actual layout within Word and the styles and formatting and stuff like that, this can cause more complication than you want at that late stage of the document. And there, it's often really much better to print it out and just say, you know, this font is too small, and circle it, sort of at the proofreading stage, or the nitpicky comment copy editing stage. You can either just do it, because the other thing is really nitpicky copy editing, you know, if you just need to do the occasional little, you know, exclamation mark or something like that, even if it did show up in track changes as a little red exclamation mark, you might not see it. So if you can circle it on a piece of paper and say, you know, put an exclamation mark here, that's often clearer. And then you have your printed notes to go back to later when you're proofreading to make sure that those changes got made. So often people are going to make you use this, but my recommendations are actually to sort of work around it. Edit with the track changes on, but not displaying it so that you can edit as you normally would. Display it only for them, and also send them a version where all the changes have been accepted, and then they can just go, great, or, you know, let's fix this up a little bit. So sort of don't use it as your editing environment, because I don't think it really works very well there. Maybe it does for you, but it certainly doesn't for me, so I don't recommend doing that. Any other questions about the track changes? Have I explained what it's doing sufficiently that you sort of get it?
Just to clarify, yeah. They only see the red changes when you save it to show changes.
Well,
and then email them that document.
What it is that I'm not entirely sure that's true. I think so. As far as I understand it, and I may be wrong here, but I think I am. When you have changes tracked in a document, so when you have at some point turned track changes on, and whether or not you turned them off again, those changes are tracked within the document. So when you send that document to somebody, they have, you know, I think when you send it, it will go in whatever view that you have chosen when you save it, I think. But they can change it to whatever other view. So if you've set it so that the changes are tracked but you're not displaying them, they can choose to see them. Or if you send it to them like this, they can choose not to see them. They can change the menu item, although most people don't know they can. So all that is saved in the document. The only way you can prevent all that from showing up is if you accept all the changes and then resave the document.
Right.
So that what they get doesn't have any of the tracking information stored in it anymore. So when you do that, when you accept the changes and resave the document, it purges out all the stuff that was in that tracking information, and it's now gone. So all the deletions and insertions and things that are in the background, when you accept the changes, or when you reject them for that matter, all that tracking information goes away for the things you accepted or rejected. If you do them all, they're all gone, and it's just like a document where you've never tracked anything.
But you'd still have them in the original document?
Well, if you just do file save after you've accepted all the changes,
yeah,
then they're all gone.
Yeah.
But if you keep an original version with the track changes, then all the tracking stays there. So essentially it's just a matter of so again, I mean, in a way, there's almost the three levels here. There's the robot watching, am I tracking changes right now or not? Am I displaying changes right now or not? And are the changes still in the document or not? Or are some of them in and some of them not? I mean, if you've accepted some and not accepted others and left some without doing anything, then some of them are there and some of them aren't. But so all that stuff is inside the document, and the safest way to get the final version, the problem you run into is if you do track changes and you just turn the display off but you don't turn the tracking off and then send it to somebody, whatever else they do gets tracked, and then if you turn the viewing on again, you get this huge red bloodbath of even more stuff you weren't expecting. So I always recommend turning the tracking off, even if you're sending it to somebody to display it, just so, unless they want to be part of the tracking exchange process back and forth. And often when you're dealing with customers, even when they say they want the track changes, you're going to have to educate them about what's going on here so that they understand what they're doing. And they may choose not to, and they just, whatever, I'll just write my stuff and they'll do whatever it does. But it's good if they understand this sort of stuff as well, so that they know what they're doing and what they're not doing and what happens when they turn it on and off and stuff like that. It's just, I mean, it's like, you know, think of it like the robot or the camera. You can turn the camera on and off, and you, I haven't quite got a metaphor for the display section that works quite as well as that. It's like, even after the camera's off, you still have the tape that it made of what you did. And you can choose to erase that tape or not, I guess. That's sort of not a bad thing. Yes?
When you play, when you do I've just been playing around with it, and I reject all the changes, the highlighting doesn't.
The highlighting, actually, these things here, the highlighting and the comments, mm-hmm. they have nothing to do with track changes at all. Comments are a separate thing. So comments are a separate feature, different from tracking changes. Highlighting, all that is putting color over it.
Yeah.
It's just coloring the text, basically.
Yeah.
It has no relation to the track changes. So when you accept and reject changes, it has nothing to do with this. What you can do is you can just say, no highlighting, and then it goes away. Or you could, I don't know, you might be able to search for anything that's got highlighting in it. What I recommend is generally that or the other thing you can do is you can actually select the entire document and say, no highlighting, and then it'll just delete all the highlighting in the whole document. Or, you know, if you're using it for this purpose, all you really need to do is just delete that paragraph, and then the highlighting goes away as well. It's just there for exactly as it would be in a paper document. It's just to highlight something, and it has no, Word doesn't ascribe any meaning to that at all. You can choose what color you want to highlight. You can do whatever else. It doesn't have it. Unlike the track changes, it doesn't say that this means that this is important or that it's deleted or inserted or a comment or anything. It just says it's yellow. Just like if you made it bold, it doesn't really care why it's bold. It's just, it is, and it's only there for visual representation. So the next thing I want to move on to, what are we at? Quarter to the table. Oh, sorry, yeah.
And when I'm trying to collapse it, so they made a paragraph right for the motion that they want.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to collapse it. When I'm trying to, it will not clean up that white space, so I'm just taking away XXXX, which looks terrible.
It won't clean up the white space.
It will not delete that white space.
Well, it actually is deleting it. It's just
not showing it.
It's not showing it because it can't put a strikeout in a space. So essentially, if you displayed it in such a way that you don't see the changes, that white space will be gone.
Okay.
So that's why I recommend working in the mode where it's not displaying it, because you'll see what it's actually doing. And then when you display the changes again, it'll look like it undid that, but it didn't. So it is really doing it. It's just not showing you that it deleted it very effectively, which is one reason why they've gone to this kind of model, because then if you delete, if you have the track changes on, and you delete that, it does show you what it is. It just says that it deleted a paragraph mark, which is a lot clearer than it used to be. And there's a way to set the new versions of Word so that it has the annoying display that you used to have. That's what we saw in the help there, Word 2000 style. I don't know why you do that, but if you were used to it, well, there you go. You could. So that's another thing, is that often if you're going, even now, and if you're going in track changes mode, like, for example, if you actually have some text that you've made red on purpose, you're not going to know whether it's red or whether it's inserted. Why you'd want to put red in there, I don't know, but maybe you would. And again, there could be a few other things that when the track changes is on and you're displaying everything, it's not going to show things exactly the way they finally will be. However, there's one other thing that is useful. Oh, print preview even includes that, so I guess we've got it set to include that in the printout. So there's ways to deal with that, too. So what I want to show you now, before we get to the actual practice bit, is a whole bunch of the kind of settings you can change to make working with Word a little bit less annoying. I'm going to sit down here because it's a little easier to do. Most of them, again, Word isn't necessarily super friendly with this. Most of them are in Tools Options, or if you're on the Mac, it would be under the Word menu Preference. Because And you get this massive box with all these tabs and blah-de-blah-de. You know, just tons and tons of stuff. But let's look at some of the stuff here. You can choose to have all sorts of things show up or not or whatever else. And, this is the one that I was showing before, the formatting marks. This is a really useful one. I tend to leave it like this. Paragraph marks on, nothing else on. I don't want to see all the spaces in the document. I don't want to... tab characters? Yeah, I could see maybe seeing tab characters. Optional hyphens? No. Optional breaks? So that would be places where you had... you can, when you're typing, actually say, if this word is going to be hyphenated, this is where I want it to happen. I think it's like alt hyphen or something. And it can show you whether those are there or not, all that sort of thing. Okay, various other ones here. So in that case, what I did there is I changed it. Now I've no longer got the spaces between, but I've got the... Actually, let me go back to a normal document that doesn't have all the track changes and stuff. So let's grab this one. Okay, so tools, options. So my recommendation is turn on the paragraph marks, turn off the rest of it, maybe use the tab characters, and then you'll see, you know, you'll see these line endings, you'll see the paragraphs. If you put a tab in, oh no, that's not what I wanted. Being too smart again. So if I have a tab here, it shows you with these arrows that there is in there. And that can be useful because maybe you don't want tabs, or maybe you do. So that's a good thing to display. There's actually some other options in here that... draft font. Yeah, I think that's only in normal view. So here. So what I did there... Sorry, just go back. In here... This is what it would normally look like in normal view when you see whatever fonts you've chosen, and they could be whatever. Let's say we'll pick something here. Styles and formatting. And we'll make this 5, whatever. Okay, now if I'm in normal view and I go to Tools, Options, Draft Font, you can choose to make the whole thing a single size font, just like an old kind of typewriter, except it still does the boldface and things. This is interesting because it's actually a very good way when you're proofreading something on screen. If you change it to this draft font view, you're looking at it in a totally different context than what you've been looking at it for the past 18 days while you've been editing this document, and you can actually see things that you didn't notice before because it's now in a different font and you don't have all the formatting and size issues there. So I found that actually useful when you're at the... Or when you're in the pure writing phase where you don't want any of the fancy formatting to appear. So you can choose any font here you want. The default is Courier because that's sort of, you know, old school. But you can choose whatever, Gaudi old style. And then everything will look like that. And then when you change it back, turn draft font off, it goes back to whatever the real formatting is. So that's sort of interesting. I don't know who came up with that idea. It's not something that ever would have occurred to me. So there's other stuff here too. Here's another funky one. Blue background, white text. So again, this is very useful for if your eyes are tired, if you want to proofread, if you just want to go back to the days of Word 5.0 for DOS, if any of you ever did that, where it was white on blue, and Courier. Some people work that. This, oh yeah, here we go. Turn off the animation, turn off the sound, it's already off here. All the bleeps and bloops and swooshes and everything else, turn that off. Confirm conversion and open, that's probably if you're opening an old version, old Word file. Mail's attachment. This is where you can set how many files show up over here. So when you have a file, how many files of your recent files show up here, you can tell it to have a whole bunch in there, which is useful. Help for WordPerfect users, remember that? Navigation keys for WordPerfect users. Background open of web pages, I don't know, I'd leave that off. Measurement units, you can choose to go centimeters, millimeters, points, picas, depending. Allow starting and reading layout, okay, whatever. And this is for Asian fonts, I'm not worried about that. Now there's a bunch of other ones here. Web options. I don't recommend using Word for either web pages or email. First of all, because I don't like HTML email anyway. And also, it seems kind of clunky to use Microsoft Word to write your emails when they're usually supposed to be relatively simple documents. So I don't recommend doing any of that stuff, but it's there. Now, there's other stuff here. Okay. Now, here, it gives you options. When you paste a picture in, what do you want to happen to it by default? You can always change it. So in this case, it goes in as a character, but you can have it go into one of those wacky layers by default if you want. When selecting, automatically select entire word. This is something that's sometimes annoying. Like, if I do this, and I get to... Or if I double-click there, it gets the whole word, gets the space after the word. Sometimes I don't want it to do that. So if you find that you're constantly annoyed that it's grabbing characters at the end of the word that you don't want, like say you're going, okay, I'm here, and I'm going, and you notice that when I got here, I started at Monstro, and when I get to the next word, it selects the whole rest of monstrosities. I might not want that. I'm an editor. I selected that on purpose. I don't want you to grab the whole rest of the word. Well, if you don't want it to do that, you can tell it, no, don't do that. So when selecting, automatically select entire word, no. Prompt to up style. Okay, this is something I recommend you turn on. Remember when we were saying auto update a style? So when you're... if you have one of those styles that has accidentally gotten set so that when you make changes to something that's in that style, it wants to change all the rest of the things in the whole document, this will ask you if that's what you want to do. And if you see that, you can go, oh, no, I don't want to do that. So I recommend leaving that on. Keep track of formatting. I'm not sure what that is. That might be track changes, but I don't know. Okay, enable click and type. This is where you can just open a document. Let's see what click and type is. You go file, new, blank document. And I'll start down here. Oh, let's go into print layout. So if you're in print layout, I start down there and I go hello. All I did there was click and start typing. So it automatically put a whole bunch of returns in there in a tab to get me started. Personally, that's it being too smart and it annoys the heck out of me. So I turn that off. But that's designed for people who just want to start. Again, people who don't do this for a living, it's for them to just get going and get it starting to do roughly what it thinks they want right away. I turn that off. And then again, that sets a default paragraph style. IME options, I don't have a clue what that is, so I'm not even going to go there. You've got a bunch of options in printing that can be useful. Draft output, that gives you that same kind of draft font look where it's printing out in a different font, very plain. Also good for proofreading if you're just printing it out and you just want to look at the text without a lot of formatting. Update fields and links. So if you want, when you print, it can update all your cross-references, your table of contents, your headers and footers, your various links, all that stuff. You can have it do that before you print automatically if you want to turn those on. If not, just whatever. These I wouldn't worry about too much. Include with document properties. You can turn that off. Hidden text, drawing objects, background colors. So if you email something and you've got this off, theoretically, although I wouldn't bet on it, those properties I showed you, the author and all that stuff, might not go with it. I think it does. I don't know exactly how that. And then there's a bunch of other options there. Here's the save tab. Always create backup copy. This is interesting. This is where when you save, it will save more than one copy, and it'll save the last most recent one you did, and then whatever your current one is. That's sort of a nice thing if you often run into trouble with that sort of stuff. So embed TrueType fonts. If you're using wacky fonts that you don't expect other people to have, you can use this feature to include them in the document. Doesn't mean they'll be able to use it in other documents, but at least they'll see things better. So if I'd done that on this original document where we had those weird blocky characters that were in Bell Gothic bold or something, it would have actually come through properly. That's kind of nice. It doesn't work for PostScript fonts, which are another type of font that might not work. There's the autosave, save auto recover info, so every 10 minutes, I actually recommend putting that at 5 or 3, because it used to be that computers were slow enough that this would actually be really annoying because it would be saving and you'd be sitting there waiting and whatever. Now it sort of happens in the background unless the document's really large. So if you set that low, that means that if something crashes, you'll be able to run Word again and get back to where you were no more than 5 minutes ago. So that's good. Smart tags, I don't even I'd actually turn those off because I'm not even sure what they are. So prompt for document properties, prompt save normal template. Here's something you see a bit. Sometimes if you turn this on and you've made some adjustments and you save the file, it says, do you want to save normal? And what that means is that you've made changes to this document that somehow could affect the generic settings in the normal.doc. Usually say no. I turn that option on and I say no, I want the normal template to be the way I left it. I don't want it to get modified. Because the thing that it does is when that happens, it doesn't tell you what has changed. It just says, the normal template has changed. Do you want to save it? And I go, well, I don't know what I did. You know, I made some changes in this document. I don't want all my headings from now to perpetuity to be that huge Gilson's extra bold outline thing that I did in that other document. And maybe that's what will happen. And I think because this is off by default, that's how you get some of these documents that you receive that have just the weirdest, you know, you set up a heading or something that wasn't in the document and it comes out in this weird font, weird size, strange margins, whatever else, because somehow that happened because 2 years ago they made some change that ended up affecting this normal template and nobody really knows how or why, but it's persisted through every document they made ever since. So I recommend prompting and then saying no when it asks. And here's an interesting thing. Default format. Save Word files as Word document. So you can set it to save by default as something else. For example, RTF. Yeah, so that's a format that's got that's fairly well established. It sometimes makes bigger files than the Word document format. It doesn't support all the weird things you can do inside Word. But pretty much anybody can read that because there are any word processor can read and write RTF. And Microsoft actually created the format. It's just kind of sat there, and they've done some stuff in the doc format that you can't do in RTF. But if you're... sorry?
Can Mac read it now?
Oh, yeah. Mac's, in fact, the built-in text editor on Mac's by default uses RTF. So rich text format is actually good if you're mostly dealing with documents that don't have a lot of heavy layout and formatting of that sort and are mostly just, you know, text with headings and whatever else. You can use RTF and you can even set it as your default format and then you can be pretty sure that anybody will be able to read it. I don't know if all the track changes stuff go through here. Probably not. Maybe that's a good thing. So RTF is not a bad thing to make your default if you want, or at least to save before you send it to people. You can also use Word document and then say disable any features introduced after, you know, Word 6 in 1995. So if you know that the person that you're working with has an older version of Word, you can make sure that you're saving in a format that they will be able to read and write without any trouble. Chances are they'll be able to open it anyway, but they might have some strangeness if you're using a newer version or if they're using a newer version than you are.
Does that just apply to the document you're working on or any document?
Well, in this case, it would apply to every document. So you would say that in this, if you set this, it would be every document I create, unless I say differently, is going to be a Word document, a Word 6 document, or an RTF document, or something else. So, for example, if you're working with the same people or in an office all the time, or your other computer has an older version of Word, and you want to be able to go back and forth, your laptop's got one, and the other one's got another, you can do this. Now, this is not an issue because since Word 2000, the Word file format hasn't changed. So if you have Word 2000 on one machine, Word 2003, and Word 2004 for Mac, and Word 10 for Mac, and even Word 98, might even be the same on Mac, you can just move files willy-nilly back and forth because the file format is the same, except for a few wacky things like the voice recording that I'm doing here. But so generally, any, you know, again, this is real legacy stuff. This is saying if somebody has a version of Word from 1997, you know, so 9 years ago, but they're still using a 9-year-old version of Word, or something else that can read and write that 9-year-old version, or if they're using an 11-year-old version of Word, you can make sure that you're compatible with them. So that's good. You can either do it here, or when you save the document, you go File, Save As, and you get the same kind of choices down here. You can say Word 97, or you can say Word 6 and 7, or Works, sorry, Word 97. You know, you can say that stuff when you save an individual document. Yeah, that's just this document. But if you want to do it more generally, you can do it in the options. Security. So you can set a password on a document. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not so secure that CSIS couldn't get at it, but it means that just generally, if somebody gets a hold of that document and tries to open it, they won't actually be able to read or write or do anything with it until they put this password in. But don't forget the password. And again, there's a difference. There's a password to open and there's a password to modify. So you can set it so people can read it, but they can't change it unless they have a password. So that's not bad. It is cryptographic, so that's interesting. So if you do the password, what it does is it actually digitally scrambles the contents of the document unless you have the password. So it is actually pretty difficult for anybody to get at the data, even with another tool, which is kind of cool. Or read-only recommended. You do a bunch of stuff like that.
So in that respect, you don't need a PDF file. You can modify this so that they can't.
That's true. Yeah, you can do that. The difficulty there is you have to make sure that they have a version of Word or whatever that understands that and can decode it.
Okay.
So people almost never do this. I've encountered Excel spreadsheets that have had passwords on them, but I've never encountered a Word document that doesn't. So it's not a bad idea. That doesn't guarantee that all your formatting is going to come out exactly right, but it's kind of neat. Here's the good one. Remove personal information from file properties on save. I say turn that on all the time, unless you want to have that information in there. So, you know, it will still have stuff like the title of the document, but it won't have your name and all that other stuff. So where I removed it manually before, this just prevents it from going in the first place. Here's another good one. Warn before printing, saving, or sending a file that contains track changes or comments. So in this case, if you inserted comments or track changes, and even if you're not displaying them, it will tell you that they're in there before you print it or before you save it or send it to somebody. So that's useful, because then you can, you know, if you've forgotten that you turned track changes on 3 weeks ago, it'll tell you. This I'm not really sure about. Okay. The macro security thing, by default, this is pretty good. One of the issues that came about, I guess probably about Word 95, Word 97, is that Microsoft started building in a little programming language into Office where you could do some automated functions. Like I said before, if you're skilled enough, you can figure out how to automate some of these things you do over the time. But of course, when you put in a programming language, that opens it up for people to write nasty programs that do things you don't want. So there were, and they're not very common anymore, but they do exist sometimes. There were ways where you could get a Word document that basically had a virus inside it. And it would actually work in some way or another on Windows and Mac because it was a compatible language in both things, and it could do stuff to Word at least and potentially to stuff on the rest of your system. These settings let you determine whether you want to do that. And what it does is it usually pops up a little dialog box saying this document has some macros in it. Do you want to enable them or not or whatever? Most documents that you edit don't require this sort of thing, but you can create some complex sort of semi-programmatic stuff in there where there are forms to fill out and things that you can do that automatically calculate things and other stuff. And some of those would be in here. I recommend generally turning them off. In fact, I'd be happy to crank this up to very high and just leave it at that. I'll ignore the Asian typography because I don't know anything about it. File locations. This is a useful thing for you to say, you know, where do I store things by default? Where are the templates? In fact, that's probably where the normal is in Microsoft templates. And you can change where those go. You can say, when I create a new document, where would it go by default? So you don't have to navigate to wherever you want to put it every single time you save a document. So those are useful. Japanese find, I'll know more about that. Okay, let's get some of the others. Spelling and grammar. Check spelling as you type. This is good. Squiggly red underlines when a word is misspelled. I like that. Grammar. Check grammar as you type. No! The grammar checker is awful. It doesn't really understand any kind of grammar that's... I mean, it understands C spot run, but it often identifies with the squiggly green underline things that are grammatically perfectly fine. It just doesn't understand them. And the suggestions it makes to correct them are often laughable. So I turn grammar checking off entirely, and I never use the feature because I never find it even remotely useful. It also doesn't seem to have changed much in about 11 or 12 years. Even though computers are much faster now, I just say, well, this is one of the areas where there probably would have been some innovation here if Microsoft Word wasn't the 800-pound gorilla of the market. Somebody might have figured out some tools that do this better. And there used to be separate grammar checkers that you could buy, but that whole market kind of died out, and now this is what's there, and it's not very good, and Microsoft doesn't really have any incentive to improve it, because people like me never use it anyway. So here, it even has grammar and style, and so I just don't use it. So you can do a bunch of other stuff here. Ignore words in uppercase, ignore words with numbers, so William123 at whatever, ignore internet and file addresses, so it's not going to try and spell check your email address, for example. You can set up a bunch of separate custom dictionaries if you want. One of the things I found, this is a useful one, sometimes you'll find that you have a document and you can't add custom words to the dictionary. So you find a word that's misspelled like this, and you want to add it to the dictionary, but this is grayed out. It won't let you add a new word. And you're like, why not? I want to add the new word. Well, usually what that is this custom dictionary thing, and there's nothing here. So you can just say, well, add a new custom dictionary. And you create a file and call it, Derek. And then it's in the list. And then you'll be able to add new words to it. So sometimes that's all it is. You just don't have a custom dictionary set up. And when you do, then you can start adding words to it. So again, turn off check grammar. It's bad, that evil. Here's where you can set all the things about how track changes work, what colors it picks, what sort of preferences it uses, do you want to use the balloons, you can play around with this. It's just, this is where you can get it back to that awful way it used to be if you really want. And what colors different people are, what the deletions look like, what formatting are in. So, and this, you could even say show lines connecting to the text. So in this case, if you don't want those lines going out to where... So if you want to work with the track changes on and displayed, you can tweak this a bit so that it's less annoying than it would be otherwise. Here's where you can put in, if you do want that property stuff to be there, you can put in something that's not going to be so incriminating or personal. You could just say, whatever editing service rather than your personal name. Or you could delete this entirely and then it will never put anything in there. And compatibility, this gives you really fine-grained control over the history of Word, basically. You can say, I want this version of Word to behave sort of, but not exactly like the way Word 5.0 for Mac did in 1992, as far as whether it allows you to do certain things or not, or this or that. If you're just completely, combining table borders like Word 5.0 is for the Macintosh. Who does that? I don't know. But basically, back then, they didn't have, the tables weren't sophisticated enough that you could have different kinds of borders in different places, and all the border edges had to be the same. And if you want it to be like that now, you can do that. And, here there's a huge... look at the list. It's just like... Use Word 2002 table style rules. Use Word 97 line-breaking rules for Asian text.
A lot of people with a lot of personal favorites.
Yeah, This is the breadcrumb tale showing you why Word is such a monster. That there are people who care. Somebody in the world turns these on and off in a particular combination of ways. I'm surprised they don't actually have a little way to save this setting in a little file that you can then move to somebody else's computer so you can have it exactly the way you want it. And, you know, and then switch between different setups depending with some automated macro tool. I mean, you theoretically you could. You can substitute fonts, which is actually some, you know, like, for example, here, this Bell Gothic Black, it substituted it automatically for some god-awful font that's, like, I don't know why it did that. But I could say that if it's Bell Gothic Black, I really want it to be script NT bold. So that's good if you have missing fonts, that sort of thing. And here, this default will take you back to the way it always was. Now, you'd think that would be all the options you've got. But no! No. There's a whole bunch of other things. One of them is, you know what really annoys me? Is these menus. That you notice that I've been doing this every time. Recent versions of Word for Windows, thankfully not for Mac, which is what I use, gives you these simplified menus by default. These are the things that I think you would like to be able to do. If you really have something else to do, we want you to click again. You know, so I've been going, where's that menu option? Oh, it's in the extended version of the menu. So, let's figure out how to turn that off. I right-clicked in sort of blank space in the menu bar here, and I'm going to customize. So, always show full menus. So, you can have it so that after a short delay, that they just pop up. So that's really, you know, so if I were to go, there we go. That's not a very short delay. Doesn't save me much time. But okay, so we'll go tools and, not tools. Here I'm right clicking on there and going customize. And so always show full menus. Show standard formatting toolbars on two rows. Sure, why not? Large icons. Yeah, okay. List font name. Whoa, that's huge. Wow. Okay, I guess if you had a really big monitor, that might be good. menu animations. Random? Why would you be like, who cares if you can set this? But somebody does. Do I really, you know, what I want, I don't want to decide which menu animation I want. I want somebody at Microsoft to do some research and say this menu animation, if we're going to have any at all, is the most effective for helping people understand what the menu is doing, and we're going to use that one. And that's the choice. That's what it's going to be. Maybe you can turn it off, but it's off or on. I don't want the, okay, I want the random menu animation so that every time I open a menu, it does it in a slightly different way. See? So, okay, I don't know what it's doing now. So yeah, that one sort of slid down. One just popped up. Another one kind of zipped off to the side. Do I want that? Who wants random anything? It's crazy. So that one sort of slipped down there. So I'm going to say menu animations. Is there a none option? No? Okay, well, I'll just say system default then. And then this is where, actually, this can be useful. You can customize the keyboard, so you can say which key applies to which menu command. On the Mac, it's slightly different. The preferences are in a different place. You can actually set some system-wide. Anyway, if you want into that, you can get into that. Commands, you can actually... you can customize all the menus, all the toolbars, you can move stuff around, put different items with different icons in different places that do different things. You can change what's in each menu so that when somebody else sits down at your computer, they don't know what the hell is going on. And similarly, when you sit down at someone else's computer, you don't know what's going on because you customized yours so heavily that you don't have a clue how anybody else's works anymore. So you can do that if you want. I don't particularly recommend it, but you can. This gives you options on which toolbars you want. You can create your own toolbar. I think, if I recall correctly, this is actually stored in the normal template. So there's Derek's toolbar. And where is it? Let's go. Oh yeah, there it is. There's my toolbar with nothing on it. So if I right-click on it and customize it, I can then start adding stuff to it. I can say, okay, well, I want
new page.
I want this. Let me drag it in here. I want a new web document. And I want the insert menu. Can I do that? Oh, yeah. Insert column break. And then I can do this up here. So I can have my own totally custom thing that makes new documents, new blank documents, and inserts a column break. And that's my own toolbar. But you could build your own toolbar. You could build one toolbar that has only the things you actually use on it and get rid of all the rest. And that's kind of nice. Or, for example, if you do get into building some of these macros and scripts, you can attach them to a toolbar that you can make come and go. Or if you only use some of the features of track changes, you can customize the track changes bar so it doesn't have the highlighting or this or that. So maybe you can go in and actually, you've got to find a blank section. Go ask a question box. Anyway, reviewing. That's called the reviewing bar, by the way, not the track changes bar. It's called the reviewing bar. That's really helpful, isn't it? So anyway, there's a way that you can customize that too. But anyway, that's all well and good. Now, are we done yet? No, we're not. Okay, now, thankfully, my menus now come down at full size every time. There are a bunch of other things you can do here, and most of them begin with auto format options. Okay, you notice that I've got this whole other dialog box. There's another way to get to that. Tools, I think it's tools. Autocorrect options. So autocorrect and auto format are not the same thing, but they use the same preferences dialog box. I don't know. So autocorrect. Here's a bunch of things that I recommend various things about. Correct two initial capitals. That's usually useful, although there are some circumstances where those you don't want it to do that. Capitalize the first letter. All these are automated things that you may or may not want Word to do. Capitalize the names of days. That's usually pretty safe. Correct accidental usage of the caps lock key. That's probably pretty good. Replace text as you type. I usually turn this off, usually. Or at least I can go down and edit this list, because I mean, things like this are pretty good. But, you know, so for example, C like that automatically turns into a copyright, TM into TM, all that. Three periods turns into an ellipsis character. Did you know those are different? Did you know that when you have three dots, that's actually a separate character that's three dots, it's not three periods in a row? Nobody but a typographer would care, but it is so.
Look at little faces.
Yeah, little faces, arrows, all sorts of things. So you can, I tend to turn this off. Because if I really want one of those characters, I usually use the insert symbol to do it, and I don't want it to automatically do stuff. Now, however, there are other things here that are, some of them are useful and some of them aren't. I'm going to sit down again. Straight quotes with smart quotes. This one depends on what you're doing. If you're formatting the document for print, I recommend you leave this on. So whenever you type quotes, the quotes do the typographer's quotes curling the correct direction. If you're formatting it for something that's going to go on a website or in an email or in plain text, turn that off. And then what you can do is if you turn this off and then do that search and replace I showed you before where you search for a quote and replace it with a quote, it will turn all the curly quotes into smart quotes, all the smart quotes into straight quotes. And if you turn this on again, it'll do the reverse when you do that search and replace. So this is a useful way to turn it back and forth. Unfortunately, there's no command that just says, make all the quotes straight. I have another program that does that, a text editor. That's great. It just says, straighten quotes, and it does it through the whole document. Really nice. Okay, ordinals first with superscript. I hate this because it goes like this, first place. So it turns it into a little superscript like that. I don't actually like that at all. In fact, I don't tend to type first like that. So I turn that off. Similarly, fractions. I don't really want it automatically making the little fraction symbols. Hyphens with dashes. Okay. It's actually pretty smart about this. If you do you know the difference between an M dash and an N dash?
No.
Okay. going to, this is nothing to do with the record, but if you are writing sort of an interjection kind of dash, or the kind of thing you would use instead of parentheses, that's called an M dash. It's a long dash that has no space around it. So if you look in a properly typeset book, you will see that so something like this. He said dash, and he meant it dash, that. That's called an M dash, and that's because it's supposed to be the root of an M in the type, or at least in some font. And that's the type of dash that you think of as a dash, where and there's no space around it, and it just goes between the characters and goes like that. There's an N dash, which is like this, where you go one of the uses, there are several others, is when you have a phrase like this, the New York-Chicago train, and you have something in between it, that's actually a shorter dash than this one, but it's not a hyphen, it's called an end dash. And you also use it in something where you have 1916 to 19, and that would be an end dash. If you ever look in a book, you'll see that this is a shorter dash than this one, but it's not a hyphen either, it's longer than a hyphen. And that's called an end dash because it's supposed to be the root of an end. And then there's a hyphen, which is just hyphen, the kind of thing you do where you have, you know, reorganize words like that, if you use a hyphen. Or that you would put in a hyphen in your name or at the end of the paragraph, perhaps. It's a short little one. Those are all actually different characters. But they're not easy to generate when you're typing, and most people don't know exactly what to do with them. This one automatically does it. So as I showed you before, if I type if I go in here and go dash, 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 and then actually if I go space here, I have to type something else, it automatically turned double hyphens into an M dash. An N dash is a little trickier to generate. Usually the way you do that is, I think, yeah. So if you do a dash with a single dash with spaces around it and then keep typing, it will do an N dash. Sometimes you actually see this instead of that, but with spaces around it. There are typographers who would wring your neck for doing that, but I think it's fine too. But anyway, that's what this option that we were looking at in autocorrect.
Is there always no space after the M dash?
An M dash never has spaces around it.
Okay.
In the only circumstance it would is if it's actually at the end of something. Where it's representing somebody being interrupted, for example. But there is no normal circumstance where you would have an M dash that has space anywhere near it. At the end of a word. So basically think of the longish parts of it as sucking up where the spaces would be. That's why it's so long. N dashes, actually, in this context, they don't. What they're meant to do there is to include everything in both sides of it to make it clear that everything belongs in there. If you're using them, sometimes, for example, you might use them in a list where you say, you have three options here. Green, you know, boldface, green, and dash, and then you have a sentence, or like in a list. Let me just show you what that would look like. Thus, pigs. Cows. For example, like that. I mean, ignore the wording because it totally doesn't make sense. But so a list like this, is another way that you might use an end dash as a sort of break, you know, the indicator that this is almost like a that this is actually a title to this bullet point. Well, that's another way to use an end dash rather than a hyphen. Now, again, most people will never notice. However, as you read, I find personally that when these are used correctly, they actually make the reading a little more comfortable, which is, I guess, why they exist. So, you know, the M dashes in particular, when they're used properly as dashes to set things off, they make it clear. If you ever see it where people just use little short little hyphens with spaces around them on either side, it doesn't look quite right. You don't quite get the right impact of that because your brain realizes that it's a little bit confused about what's going on there. So it's worth learning what those are. But anyway, how we got to that was the autocorrect options, which let that happen automatically. So this, I think, is good. Long vowel sounds with dash. I don't even know. I don't know what that's talking about. Bold and italic with